Hey, y'all, I'm Tressie McMillan Cottom, the co-host with Roxanne Gay of Here to Slay from Luminary. Our show is so damn good, and we have an excerpt we'd like you to listen to.
Tressie and I recently sat down with the luminous activist and storyteller Amber J. Phillips, and we talked about everything from how wild we are all going to get post-COVID and the inadequate ways Black people have been engaged with politically. If you want to hear more, you can listen to the entire thing by going to luminary.link/slay.
Typically, when we engage Black folks and communities of color or low-income communities, any communities that are outside of the Beltway, it's this assumption that they're going to vote Democrat or they're going to vote for on the right side of history. But as a Black girl who is embedded in Black communities, I know that we deserve actual political education. Like, not just fill out your voter registration card, but
Show up every 2 years.
Exactly. Exactly. And I'm like, I can't leave that work up to like Charlemagne the God, I'm dropping. You can tell me what I can and can't say.
No, I'm all for it. You have actually touched on a pet peeve of mine. I have many issues with Charlemagne, the not God, and that
what is it, Lenard?
It is Lenard. Lenard. Yes.
We keep outsourcing political education to entertainers. Mm-hmm. And I understand that might, and I've said this also about feminism, the superstar is the door. And that's fine. We need people to walk through that door. I embrace it. But what we have to give them more than just the door. Yeah. We have to give them a place to walk into where we actually educate people on policy and not tell them what to think. Just tell them what the options are. Mm-hmm. And that we don't do this, that we're so, not we, but that they are so condescending to Black voters, Latino voters, to a lesser extent, Asian voters, that they just say, you should vote for us because we're not them.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I just keep thinking, you're going to actually need a better argument than that if you really want to sustain a Black vote, if you really want to capitalize on, say, what happened in Georgia. Thing.
And not even just a Black vote, but Black leadership. We only talk about these communities in terms of what they can contribute to these establishments as if it's not our grandparents and our aunties who are embedded in Black communities, who are my grandmother ran the food bank at my church, right? Like, there's this assumption that all Black people agree on how policing should work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's this assumption that all of us are clear about what reproductive justice is. There's an assumption that we're clear about what kind of supports and policies Black queer folks need. Mm-hmm. And when we're reduced down to a vote during presidentials or midterm elections, all of us miss out on the visionary possibilities or the political leadership of Black folks at the local level, at the family level, as well as how that can impact national politics. So I love that about we leave it up to celebrity or we build political superstars only to reduce them down to a couple of talking points or a message box.
Okay, so now that you said that, you know what I got to ask you about? We've got a new crop of political superstars. Some people want to start with AOC, but I think what we really are talking about now is Cori Bush, or we're really talking about the new freshman class who is often thought of as knowing exactly these narratives that you talk about. And I sometimes get in trouble. It's fine. I'm living. I get in trouble for not being as enthusiastic as people expect and really obligate Black women to be in public. They want to consume our emotions. I have to perform being enthusiastic. I have to perform being faithful, right? Hopeful, because that's how other people feel it. They consume it from us. But I think that there has to be a way to go, okay, you can see this thing happening, but still have your eye on the ball of the larger political picture. As somebody who has organized, who has been in both like local and nonprofit spaces, especially during this, you know, Trumpian years, but also the Black Lives Matter years of trying to figure out how they were going to relate to electoral politics, What's your read on our emerging Black political superstar class?
I think it's exciting to see Black folks running for office and holding mm-hmm. leadership.
Yep.
I think sometimes when we talk about politics, we separate or we only think about electoral politics. We don't mm-hmm. also look at how nonprofit organizing falls into that. Like when I moved to D.C., everyone in my family thought I worked at the White House. I did not. Mm-hmm. I've only been there once. mm-hmm. So as an example, but I think what when I think of specifically about like Ayanna Pressley.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. she was doing like sex education around for Black women and girls. And I was like, oh, that's really cool. Right. And mm-hmm. my hope is that as these folks are entering into these upper echelon power structures, that they're able to carry those threads. And really, I want us to listen to what they're saying. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense. Like, I really want us to, again, it goes back to this political education thing. I don't want to see Stacey Abrams and not ask real questions about her policy stances. Yeah. I don't want to see these folks and then not say, okay, mm-hmm. what are you doing around Hyde, repealing the Hyde Amendment? And I think sometimes... Mm-hmm. Representation can kind of do a doozy on you. We're seeing this with Kamala mm-hmm. Harris, right? It's like, ooh, yeah. we'll be excited she's a Black woman, but it's like, okay, but what about that policing record, girl? Mm-hmm. Like, how are we redistributing wealth in the form of these stimulus packages? How are we how are we doing all that work? That's what I really want people to ask them.
No, you raise a good point. One of the most frustrating things is I'm very interested in the squad and then the people who entered this cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish more people would talk to them about policy. Lauren Underwood moved mm-hmm. forward with her Black maternal health initiative. And very few people are actually talking about it. Mm-hmm. People mm-hmm. talk about, oh, diversity, there's diversity in Congress and so on. But like, what are they actually doing? What kinds of policy initiatives are they doing? And AOC, I actually find her interesting. I like her. One of the things that's interesting about her is that she does, on a granular level, try to explain what's going on.
Teach people. Policy. She does. Yeah.
She does try to teach people and sort of open up the mysteries of Congress. And mm-hmm. I wish that more people of color had the platform to do that.
Yeah.
The space. Like, I think what AOC is doing with social media. So I also did a lot of digital organizing when I was in DC. Mm-hmm. And a big push that I will always make was to be honest about where we are and to really show these processes. So when mm-hmm. AOC got elected, I was super excited about how she was using Instagram Live. She showed us the behind mm-hmm. the scenes of her first swearing in. And sometimes Black women, we feel so pressured on how we show up that we can mm-hmm. tend to only show up when everything's just right. And So I think a lot of them do have the platform. If we're thinking about the use of digital media outside of things like the Washington Post and Politico and mm-hmm. Giving Comment, that they actually do have the power to speak directly to audiences. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what AOC has done so well, is she's clear about her role in politics, but she's also clear about how she's showing up in culture. And that's the piece that I think a lot of Black electeds really could dive more into.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm thinking about my entry point into politics, the first thing when you decide that you might want to run for office one day is mm-hmm. you start cleaning everything up, right?
That's right. You start to cleaning out that Twitter.
Exactly. You start to become less of who you are and really just only talking about the work. And I was, mm-hmm. and it made me a very uptight college student, I must say. I wish I would have had more fun. That's why I'm kind of pissed about this quarantine, is because I turned 30 and I was like, I wanted to be out here, you know? So
it's undermining. It's undermining some good whole summers. Yeah. Let's be honest about that.
Whole summer is just gone.
Come September, if Biden really follows through on this 300 million vaccine thing, if it actually happens, and they say it's going to happen by the end of July, we'll see. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But if it happens, I think the fall, we are going to be filthy, filthy people.
Oh, my God.
Skies out. People are going to lose their minds.
Naked. Like,
let me tell you, as somebody who had, I had my good fair share of hoe days, I really did. I I did it when you were supposed to do it, and I'm going to do it again.
Again.
If we can ever leave the house without feeling like that pressure of the hawk on your back.
Yes.
Let me just tell you something. My friends and I, we're going to Carnival.
I'm going to all the events where minimal clothing is required.
Yes, that is correct. I'm asking my people down in Mississippi if they know a juke joint. Oh, I'm asking people yes, I want a juke joint.
That's right. Dirty,
I want it bad.
Dark.
Yes.
Little dirty glasses.
Yes.
Dark liquor.
I don't want no Cosmo.
Sexy ass music.
I don't want the hells. Yeah. I want an Incredible Hulk in a dirty glass and to be pressed up against a wall that still got sticky
sweating
paper on it.
Period.
Hell yeah.
I want to get pregnant from dancing.
Yes.
I hear you. That's correct.
I literally cannot wait. So as somebody who even had her whole days, I am so sorry for everybody whose really grand whole days are being interrupted by this whole COVID nonsense. So before we move on to more important things like our whole days, I just got to say this respectability thing that you talk about with how afraid we are to perform our real selves when we are political people. It also happens, I think, in our professional lives, no matter whether it's politics or not. Like the thing about being a good, respectable Black woman is you immediately, you start putting on the drag, right?
Yes.
You got to present this certain face. And like, I'm really empathetic to that because I think AOC has, frankly, some privileges she can draw on.
Definitely.
That somebody like Ayanna Pressley cannot.
Definitely.
Right? People are there to attack a Black woman for just waking up in the morning.
Breathing.
And if she were to like crack a joke on Instagram, I honestly think they'd send out the National Guard. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, I do think that with everything burning down, like risk it anyway.
That's where I'm at.
Yeah.
When I hear people talk about my Instagram, even my mother,
mm-hmm.
especially my mom, because, you know, I look like her throughout time. So she's looking like, oh, this is what we're getting.
Life.
Yeah,
yes.
Exactly. She calls me her best thing. So
my mom calls me that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm her best thing. Yeah.
it's
a trap, Roxanne. No. Don't fall for it. It's a trap.
It's a trap.
She want to move into my house. She'll call me anything.
My mom is waiting on me to create a tiny. When that Netflix or HBO moment happens, she's like, build me a tiny house. I was like, girl, you ain't going to stay in no tiny house in the backyard.
Thank you.
So there's that.
Listen, I'm going to tell you a quick story.
As somebody whose
parents live in the tiny house in the backyard, let me tell you, my mom is already like, I need 3 bedrooms, Roxanne. And I'm just like...
That's definitely going to be my mother for sure.
She does not disappoint.
She's going to want an expansion. No. She's definitely going to want it to expand.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's what I really am team. Take up as much space as you possibly can. Be yourself. Like it sounds like so frivolous, but as someone who is constantly trying to practice being my full self, you really don't know even how far it can go until you start the process.
Yeah.
I remember the first time I got my hair colored, like when I decided to really commit to my uniform of crop tops. Like and my favorite moment with my lover, I love a crop top, was when I had to, before the pandemic, I had to present in DC and I was presenting on political narratives and I wore a crop top and some wide leg pants and that's what she gave.
Mm-hmm.
Because I just feel like a lot of these spaces weren't meant for me regardless, even if I am
in
the perfect and tailored dress.
Even if you put on the drag. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Even if I put on the drag, I am never them.
Mm-hmm.
So I may as well be fully myself because I am not only more comfortable, but here's the thing that I don't think we give enough value to. I'm having a good time.
I'm really having a ball.
Yes.
And the reality is, this is when I think about the folks who I bring into rooms with me, when I talk about Black voters or Black audiences, I'm them. You know, like I'm not going to separate myself from that.
That's it.
When you're organizing or you're coming into organizing work, people will say, find your political home, find your political home. I spent most of my 20s finding this political home and really just not fitting in the way I assumed to. I would fit in because I'm like, oh, we all agree, right? And it's like, no. Even mm-hmm. in Black spaces, I'm a dark-skinned, fat Black girl, right?
That's
and that
right.
comes with
yep.
its own set of challenges. But my goal for folks is, how can you become your own political home? How can you start with self to really not just talk about Black feminism, but enact it in your life? Mm. How are you thinking differently about your family structures? I refer to my auntie, myself as an auntie, literally. I'm an aunt. And sometimes when we talk about parenting people or people who are raising kids, I'm left out of that narrative. But the reality is, I'm a critical part of my sister's children's life, right? And I want that to be honored. And I started to include it more because I'll read bios from like people who are mothers, and they're like, I'm a mother of three. And I'm like, well, I'm an auntie of two.
Yeah,
and,
yeah,
you know, because that's also a part of my political framework.
Let me just tell you, I started doing that at some point earlier in my career, where I would list the women who had made me in my bio, right? Mm-hmm. I'm Orel's granddaughter, Vivian's daughter, right? Da, da, da. And I had a white woman come up to me after a talk. So this is post lower ed, pre thick. So I'm in a, you know, I got enough to be feeling myself, but I still need to keep a job. You know what I'm saying? That was the moment.
And you can go off, but not off. You know what I mean?
Yeah. There you go. Just that context is important. And I knew her. She was not a stranger. So, like, this is somebody who, if anybody should have, you know, had a better read on who and what I am, is my point. And I will never forget this woman coming up to me after a talk I gave and said, just so you know, you're never going to get anywhere in life until you let go of that whole, your whole mother problem.
A mother problem?
Yes, right. Yes, right.
Oh, I'm just sorry, but that's not how you know she was white and that she has not met Miss Vivian yet, because...
Thank you.
Whew, Lord,
or any other kind
her.
Of a Miss Vivian, because, I mean, this was so foreign to my understanding of how you even navigate the fucking world as a human being. And I thought, I have heard about your wayward, drug-addicted son for 10 years. Mm. I know all that boy's business. He wrecked the car. He's da-da-da-da. But somehow, when I say I'm someone's daughter, I'm the one with the narrative problem. And I started to understand that there was no narrative that I, as a Black woman, that was going to have that wasn't going to piss off, for the record, some white person somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
Or some man somewhere.
There is... enough
That's
to
right.
incite them.
Yeah. So if anything, I have doubled down, like you, with like being an aunt. I'm like, yes, I'm an aunt. I'm a godmother. I'm a this and a that. Because what I really think they have a problem with is the fact that we're something other than an appendage of them.
Right.
Correct. That we care for people other than, for example, our readership. Because
exactly.
I do find, and this seems to be unique to Black women, and I would say also Latinx women. And Native American women. When we develop a following, however modest that following might be, people tend to believe that that is our primary thing that we have to caretake. And I'm like, I actually don't caretake you at all. I write, you read, we engage perhaps. And, you know, but I'm Nicole's daughter and Michael's daughter first and last and always, whether I'm happy with them or not. And you know, it's something I think that, you know, there's this fundamental difference, and it's a cultural difference about what we prioritize. And this actually ties back to what we were talking about at the beginning of our conversation about how white people are excited for the political so-and-so to start up again while we are exhausted. And, you know, it's because we have bonds, like we have things that excite us and that nurture us and nourish us and that we nurture and nourish beyond the political. And it's interesting to see the absence. I actually feel quite sad for them.
And at the very end of the day, these are the people who will take care of us regardless of if that readership
That's
is there
it.
Or not. Yep. Regardless of if we get the promotions and the raises, mm-hmm. I go back to Carol Phillips and cry about this shit. I'm always amazed too how there's this illusion that can be presented to, especially to smart Black girls, that somehow once we go through college and we get these jobs that we are supposed to like separate from our families. Like, over there and we're over here.
Yep.
And the thing that I love, I'm also a twin. The thing that I have valued across time. You're like, wow. Yes.
I'm like, how did I not know that?
I had Hannah's mom. That's why Hannah is so my niece is so similar to me.
Does look, all right.
Even though we're fraternal twins, I really feel like my sister had my child.
Yeah, she just incubated your baby. Exactly. I get that.
So, but I think that's kind of the narrative that I got as a kid too. Like when you're smart, you have to separate from everybody.
Right.
So positioning our families as not only our support system, but for me, really a muse, and they are who I take this stuff back to. If they don't get it, then I'm not going to keep moving in that direction. And this is, I value education. I value knowledge creation, but I also want them to be a part of that. I don't want to stay too far in a place where they cannot enter.
You can listen to that entire interview with Amber J. Phillips and enter into other amazing conversations that we have on Here to Slay by going to luminary.link/slay.